From west to east and kingdom to kingdom, you're listening to the Diz Unplugged Connecting with Walt podcast. Connecting with Walt is brought to you by Dreams Unlimited Travel, experts at helping you plan the perfect Disney vacation. Visit them on the web at www.dreamsunlimitedtravel.com. Hello and welcome to episode 49 of the Diz Unplugged Connecting with Walt podcast. I am your host and Diz historian Michael Bowling, and I am joined by my co-host, producer, and good friend Craig Williams. Craig, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing well, thank you. So, anything new happening at your end of the kingdom?
What is happening? Nothing really. So It's been slow ever since we lost that redhead. It feels like we've just all been in a daze and slumber. And so if you're over at Epcot, you know, you have the Flower and Garden Festival, but that's not helping us cope with the redhead. And it's been like 3 weeks since that happened. So yeah, it's just a boring old time here out in Walt Disney World. But every now and then, it's nice to be a little bit bored.
Yeah, Disneyland, she's still walking the streets of New Orleans Square for just a little while longer.
I know. There's a chance that there will be a trip out in Disneyland that none of us have talked about right now at this point. But I'm just like, now that I know that the last day for her is April 22nd, I believe, it's just like, I don't think that's going to happen, but it would be great.
So. Yeah. Yeah, and they've released the artist renderings of what Pixar Pier is going to look like.
Yeah, that was the big news over the weekend, is seeing I guess I forgot. They did show Mr. Wheezy inside Toy Story Land. That was our great update. You with Pixar Pier, you got your concession stands all featured on what you're going to be able to get there. You got more new concept art. You found out that people got to go into the dish at Imagineering and see what it would look like to ride the Incredicoaster. And we got a Mr. Wheezy statue being installed. Yeah. So,
yeah, we found out what they're doing with the carousel over there. It's going to be Jessie's Critter Carousel.
How cool did that look?
It looked good. I've always thought that carousel is in the wrong place. A carousel should be where you have a view. It should have been like over at Paradise Bay or whatever they call that.
Yeah.
And instead, it's in a corner by a wall.
Yeah. And this one's going to be like mostly enclosed.
Yeah. So I don't know. I've never liked where they shoved that.
But so. I love the character design that they pulled, like all those cartoony woodland creatures from Woody's Roundup and then used in Toy Story Mania. And it brings it all together. I think it looks neat, as much as I will never go on it. at least it'll be pretty to look at from the outside looking in.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll see how it looks when it all opens. Where's Wheezy going in Toy Story Land?
I don't know. So I almost thought that the photo was like photoshopped just because of how it was set up, where they couldn't really like place exactly where he was going to be. But hopefully we'll find out soon. So just found out actually today that Our little media preview that we're getting for it is the 2 days before it has its grand opening on June 30th. So they must literally be working up to the wire to get this done, because heck, we were in Pandora, I think, over a month early. Plus, they started all the soft openings and technical rehearsals before it had it. But it sounds like our Toy Story Land's going to be right up to the wire. So.
Oh, well, probably because it's much more detailed than Pandora.
Yeah. I hope people understand your sarcasm on that one, because you don't do it often, but that was perfect.
Anyway, well, a couple of weeks ago, Craig put out a call for questions we could use for another question and answer episode. So this is an opportunity for a few members of our Connecting with Walt family to be a part of the show. So Craig, we got a lot of fascinating and thought-provoking questions, didn't we?
We absolutely did. Thank you guys so much for responding, especially I think I posted it on a Friday night, a little bit before I actually posted that week's show that was going out too. And so I know on the West Coast it would have been, you know, right around dinner time, but on the East Coast I think I made the post at like 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and within 2 days we had 90 responses, I think is what I said on the last show, and it kept going from there once we talked about it a little more. So just thank you guys so much for asking all your questions, and as I complained about in the post and on the show a little bit, y'all did great. It was barely any topic suggestions and mostly mm-hmm. questions that we could answer, so it's perfect.
Right, yeah, and you know, regrettably, we're not going to be able to answer all of them, but just because there are so many, and there were some questions that I thought, oh, you know what, we could make them into an episode,
yeah.
So we won't be answering those couple, because I think they're worth a deeper exploration.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so I will be hanging on to those questions. So I did go through them and I sort of grouped them like I did in last time we did this into some categories. I have one listed under Walt Disney. I have some listed under Walt Disney, some under just Disney theme parks in general. That was where we got a majority of our questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, let's see in here, Disney films.
Films, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then
the company. And then,
yeah, the Disney company. And then there was some miscellaneous.
Yeah.
Categories that either were general or they went through a couple of different categories.
Mm-hmm.
Or I thought they'd be nice at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Fun ones. So. Clean up with.
Okay. All righty. So well, why don't we jump in? Craig, do you want to choose the first one?
Yeah, I'm going to choose the first one. I'm going to choose the first one in our question list, because I think it's something that we've kind of talked about here and there before, something we even led a little tour of sorts during the 20th anniversary event, I believe, if I can remember correctly. I don't know. It's been so long now. But this question comes from Renee and says, in each of your respective parks, what attraction / adventure or own personal tradition within the park do you enjoy in order to stay connected to Walt? So, Michael, you have a lot more options than I do.
Okay. Well, yeah, so I'll take a look at Disneyland here. Well, what I do is, well, if I'm just going in general, you know, I'm not going for a specific purpose, I always walk down Main Street USA, and I always check out windows, and I look at details and things like that, see what's new in the windows. I like to go, go to Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. You know, they have the Walt Disney story in there, and then it's just, you know, that was, you know, he admired Mr. Lincoln. It was a great influence on his life. It was the first large figured audio animatronic character that he made. I will go to Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room, because that was the first audio animatronic show that they did. I will walk usually over to the Storybook Land canal boats because of Walt's love of miniatures. It sort of spawned Disneyland. And I just think it's charming. And it has so many of his characters, you know, depicted in scenes there in their little, you know, homes and buildings and all that. Of course, I have to go on It's a Small World. So because that was his, you know, that launched him there at the 64-65 World's Fair, along with Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. And that's just so much Walt, you know, that ride and its message. I always sit at the Riverbell Terrace. I like to watch people in the Rivers of America because that's where Walt liked to sit. He liked to watch the traffic on the river, and that's where he would sometimes think about what is he going to create next over at the, you know, for his park. And I, of course, have to ride the railroad.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, it all started, you know, they say Walt built Disneyland so he'd have a place for his railroad. Pirates of the Caribbean, that was his last attraction that he actively worked on. So I like to go on that one. Haunted Mansion, I go on. It was an idea of Walt's. It, of course, Walt didn't live long enough to really give clear direction to the Imagineers, but I think it's such a classic Disney attraction.
Mm-hmm.
I really like it. I always have to walk through Sleeping Beauty Castle. Again, because of that classic, you know, photo there is of Walt walking through his empty park through the castle. I gaze on the partner statue and think about how Walt would have despised it being in the park. But I do like the message that Blaine Gibson, you know, the story that Blaine Gibson has at telling of Walt and Mickey looking out down Main Street and Walt showing Mickey, look what we've created.
Oh, and when those trees are in blossom right around the partner statue and you get the perfect angle with the statue, the trees, and Sleeping Beauty Castle in the background, there is no better picture you could take in Disneyland, unless maybe you're in it with your family and having fun. But even then, you're hard-pressed. It's a beautiful area to be in at the right time of year.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And that's probably one of the most common photos you see.
Yeah.
Of the castle. And then, of course, I have to watch the fireworks because Walt was just so pleased with himself that they offered fireworks every night, you know, in the summer. And then, on my way out, I have to check out the lamp in Walt's apartment, you know, above the firehouse.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, and so those are my traditions.
Just a couple things.
Yeah, just a few things. There's so much to do. So what about you, Craig? What do you do at Walt Disney World?
Yeah, I mean, you could say, I could say, not you, but I could say that I go and do a lot of the things like Carousel of Progress, Enchanted Tiki Room, you know, the standard classics, the People Mover, things that while they didn't originate in Magic, or they didn't originate in the Magic Kingdom, they originated over in Disneyland. It still has that Walt connection to it. But honestly, if I am going to be connected to Walt, the only way to do it is by going over to Hollywood Studios and going into Walt Disney Presents. And that's like the instant way of getting that fixed, because it's the best I can do. I don't have the Walt Disney Family Museum in my backyard like Michael is lucky enough to have. I have to make do with the small little exhibit I get in a theme park in the movie when it is showing. But honestly, with the changes that they've made since they've converted it to Walt Disney Presents and added more dioramas and models in there and I just kind of cleaned the place up a bit, I think it's a really positive change. And you walk through there and you really do start to channel Walt Disney as you're moving through. So I think it is an awesome way. And then kind of to feed off what you said, before they start showing the Star Wars fireworks at night at Hollywood Studios. They still run Disney Movie Magic, the little pre-show before. And while that does cover things like Pirates of the Caribbean, some of the new films that have been coming out, it actually does pay a lot of homage to a lot of the older Disney classics, too, that he had a hand in making. And so I love that little tribute. And Happily Ever After is kind of the same way. Even though it doesn't focus on classic Disney as much as it does more modern Disney, that the second, even though they put it all the way at the end of the show, which I think is a brilliant move on their part for it, but the moment that Tinkerbell steps out and starts her flight and that finale starts to go in Happily Ever After, it just, I feel like that is something that... it's that Walt Disney magic that you look for. So those are basically my three ways with Disney Movie Magic, Happily Ever After, and then Walt Disney Presents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So, yeah, I think those are the best ways to get in touch with Walt. So
yeah, it's much easier on your coast.
It is. Well, you know, yeah, Walt spent a lot of time there.
Yeah.
So, but it's nice that he's well represented in the over at Walt Disney World.
Yeah,
his name being
exactly. You can find other ways. It's again though, it's all personal. Like I celebrate Walt in different ways when I go to Disneyland. I mean, there are some similarities, like the walk up Main Street, which I feel dirty now if I ride the monorail in the first day that I get to that park and I go straight to Tomorrowland. I feel awful for basically the rest of the day. But, you know, there's little things that I agree on, but it's all about how you view Walt and what you view are the important things. So
mm-hmm. I agree. Okay, so for our next question, I'm going to choose one from Richard Summers. If you could bring back any retired attraction, what would it be? But with the stipulation, you have to update it with new technology. So what do you add to it?
Okay, for my attraction, I would actually choose Alien Encounter.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of those ones I don't think I appreciated it enough until like the last time I actually got to experience it. And in terms of new technology, let's just be frank, there's plenty of stuff. I think they have really upped their game in 4D effects in the years since that has been gone. They could make it even scarier than the little snarl sounds and the little bit of water they splash on you here and there. Heck, the chili dog scent from Stitch's Great Escape was scarier than most of the things in Alien Encounter. But and then to think if we could have had an animatronic in there as technologically advanced as the Stitch animatronic was, and what they've done with the Jack Sparrow ones in the Shaman in the Na'vi River Journey, to think if we had a fluid alien in the middle like that now, it could be new levels of terrifying. So that's the immediate, you know, there's always the ones that I want to see Horizons back. I want to see World of Motion, but Alien Encounter, just it got a bad shake. It was good, and it could even be better.
I agree, and I think today's audiences would probably accept it a whole lot more.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that would have a better place in Tomorrowland than what they've done with it now.
Yeah. So, but what would yours be?
Well, it's funny. Mine is also a Disneyland's Tomorrowland, because I think there's very little of Walt in that land. I would bring back the People Mover, because it adds kinetics to that land that is sadly missing from there. I would improve it by making the trains maglev. The cars would have to be enclosed, and the track would probably have to be rebuilt and rerouted, because they have to allow for evacuation routes that the current track really doesn't provide a lot of. Of course, this is just one part of my desire to knock down Tomorrowland, except for the submarines. I think that land is just, it's just a shell. And I, as I've said before, it's an embarrassment. And I don't understand how they've allowed it to just languish this long for decades. Yeah. So that would be my start, is to bring back the People Movers.
And make it Rocket Rods 2.0, right?
No, I think just a nice little cruise through there would be good. But it would be a lot smoother and a lot more, and you know, make it more interesting along the tracks. Yeah. You know, not only give it a view of the land, whatever it would be, but since it would have to hug the buildings a little more, have some interesting scenes in there that hopefully are themed to the land.
Yeah, not all new technology has to be shiny and animatronic based, and it can be just smoother rides around. So
yeah,
okay, next question.
Yes.
No, that was me saying it, so I'm deciding now. I'm going to go with this one from Spencer. It's a little bit more based on Walt Disney World and the fact that it's all based on Walt Disney World, but I would be interested in your opinion from a non-local, but Spencer says, what do you guys think about what appears to be development towards Walt Disney World becoming more of a high-end destination? By this, I mean the increase in DVC villas, high-end shopping at Disney Springs, extra ticket events, amongst other trends. Does this contrast sharply with Walt and Roy's vision for Walt Disney World?
Yeah, you know, I think about this a lot, and I do think that it's starting to get priced. Just regular families, I think, are definitely getting priced out.
Yeah,
I think for Walt Disney World, and I know that there's a feel that, the extra ticket events. Well, you know, if you can, those are extras. You don't have to do them, so they're okay. And I understand that concept, but it is starting sometimes to, I don't know, get a feel of the haves and have-nots. And I do think Disney's starting to go overboard. Like the latest one I read at Animal Kingdom about the whatever that nighttime event is that they have going on over there. And it's $125. And I'm thinking, you don't get a whole heck of a lot. For the $125, I mean, it's even more for like a meet and greet or something in Dino Land, and so you know, I think you get some sort of you get to see the Tree of Light at night, or I don't know what it is, I think it's sad when I hear the ticket prices go up and then you see on the boards families computing how much it is a day. And yeah, you do get it is a full day of entertainment, and when you compare it to the cost of a movie and all that, yeah, okay. But maybe it is maybe it works out in the end better. But then when you think about, especially at Disneyland, there are so many crowds that you it's harder to even get on a decent number of attractions at the park sometimes, I think, to make it worth your while.
Yeah.
If this is like your one trip in 2 years or one trip in a lifetime, if you're only going on five or six attractions a day, I don't know. I think that would be very disappointing. When I'm an annual pass holder, I know I'm going back. You know, that's a good day.
Yeah.
So I do think that I do think it's not Walt and Roy's vision. I mean, I know that, you know, Walt kept the price of the parking lot down just so that it was more affordable. Walt and Roy, they undercharged for certain items like the souvenir books and all that because of the marketing value. Everybody would buy one and they'd have them on their coffee tables. And yeah. So other people would see them and it would be advertising in people's homes to go to the parks. So, you know, there were things like that. So, I don't know if Walt and Roy would. I think they'd understand. Of course, there's inflation. You have to pay for the new technology and all that. But I don't know if they'd like the fact that an average middle class or lower middle class family, the parks just may be out of their reach.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough question. I can't answer it on behalf of. I mean, it's different for me because I don't pay the money, so I can't answer it on behalf of the tourists who are out there spending that much money coming here, since I see it from the annual pass holder aspect of it. But I will say, just from my time with the Diz, the one thing that has been very apparent to me that I didn't realize it before is how many repeat visitors come, and I'm not talking about on a yearly basis. I'm talking the people who have to be down here a minimum of 3 times a year, because that's how much this place means. And when you start to think about that, well, it's, you know, these people are end up spending weeks of their life down here every year. They had to end up building Disney Springs not because they wanted high-end shopping available. Yeah, it's making income from stores paying to be in that area, but the whole idea was that we were told by Disney executives that it was at the point where if someone broke their shoe while they were at Walt Disney World, they're basically their only option was to leave property and go to the outlets and spend time and money outside of it, where if they have stores for those needs, when you realize you forgot something, if you can just go to Disney Springs and pick it up, that keeps you on property. And so even though it is really pricing people out, at the same time, I do kind of see this community being built up where it's nothing like what Epcot should have been. But it is funny how people are working towards the goal of, I want to live at Walt Disney World as much as possible. I want to have everything I need right in that area. So I do think it is against the ultimate vision of Walt Disney World, but at the same time, there are some ideas in there that you could start to argue, like if Epcot would have happened and Walt Disney World would have become this bigger overall community, maybe we would have seen some of these things. We definitely know the malls would have been in there, so Disney Springs would have been a big aspect of it, but we probably wouldn't have all the extra parks. We wouldn't have a Hollywood Studios and Animal Kingdom, so that doesn't mm-hmm. work. But it's yeah. a very interesting topic.
It is. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, me. All righty. Okay. There's a lot of good ones.
Yeah. To
look through here. So, okay, this is from Daniel. Although it was said Disneyland is not a museum, what attraction do you think should stay forever due to its historical significance?
We just kind of talked about this really briefly on the Walt Disney World show that we recorded a little bit ago, and talked about iconic attractions. And in terms of Disneyland, since Disneyland's not a museum, I'm just sticking with that. I'm not going to talk about World. But the one iconic thing, I think the one of the most, if not the most, I do think it's Pirates of the Caribbean in Disneyland Park. I would be devastated. I know some people love the Disneyland Paris version more. Never been, so I can't tell you. But I know that in terms of Disneyland, when I'm out there, there are basically two attractions that I will never miss. no matter what amount of time I have, and that's Indiana Jones Adventure and Pirates of the Caribbean. And I don't think Pirates I don't think Indiana Jones has the historical significance that Pirates does. But I'm actually going to take a left here and completely go against that, even though I think it's the most iconic for me. It would be the Enchanted Tiki Room. To me, that has the most historical significance all the way around, from the Enchanted Tiki Garden going into the show. It just is. I think it is so, so important to Disneyland, and the fact that soon we'll have the new dining establishment, whatever it will be, quick service, sit down. I don't know those details, but right outside the exit of Enchanted Tiki Room and beside the Jungle Cruise, like, that's just going to add to that area so much. So I would say Enchanted Tiki Room for me.
Okay, I agree. That was what I had jotted down. Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room, because it was Walt. It has his name on it. But also, for the historic reasons, it was the first audio animatronic attraction. And, you know, and when they have changed it at other parks, it has been a lesser attraction as a result. Mm-hmm. It has never been as good as the original attraction. And I'm glad that, even though maybe they have changed it at other parks, that we still have the pristine one at Walt Disney, at Disneyland. They have shortened it. You know, they did take out a tiny bit of it, but of the original show. But yeah, it's still Walt's attraction.
Yeah.
So, and it is nice that the Tahitian Terrace, or Aladdin's Oasis, is reopening as a new outdoor seating area. I guess it's going to be like a marketplace.
Yeah, it honestly doesn't matter. As long as there's going to be a place there to buy a drink so you can sit there, mm-hmm. and even if it's just water and a little bit of soda, not like a specialty non-alcoholic cocktail in there. It doesn't have to be amazing. It just has to be a nice place to sit around and relax and just enjoy that perfect, perfect area and watch
listen
the crowds
to the jungle
shuffle through.
Yeah. Listen to the jungle. We're all hoping the Barker Bird is going to be back.
It looked like it from that concept art. So
it did. It did. That'll be exciting. Okay, Craig, what about you? What's the next question here?
This is a fun one. It's one that I think about all the time, and it comes from Diane. Diane says, which parks do you like better in the day, and which do you like better at night? Diane prefers Epcot and Magic Kingdom at night, and Animal Kingdom and Hollywood Studios during the day. So what is it for you, Michael?
For me, the park I enjoy at night, it's true for Disneyland and true for the Magic Kingdom. Both of those take on a new magic at night. It's like they're completely new parks with the lighting. I remember since I was a little boy, there is something about those twinkle lights in the trees. I just don't know what it is, but they just delight me to no end. I love twinkle lights. I want to have them in my backyard and in the summer, because to me that's so summery. And just, you know, Disney, they do such a spectacular, the Imagineers do such a spectacular job with lighting of their exteriors. And so those two parks I prefer during the night. The other parks I'm fine with during the day. Epcot is very nice at night. I like it too, but it's harder to see some of the details because the buildings are so tall there. In World Showcase, some of them, it's harder to see them at night.
Yeah.
But I do like the ambiance of Epcot World Showcase at night. Strolling around, listening to the music, grabbing a bite to eat or drink, and sitting out by the World Showcase Lagoon. I think that is very nice and very relaxing and charming. Hollywood Studios, I don't care. at the moment, and Animal Kingdom during the day is when I prefer it. although it's beautiful at night, the animals are not out and about. Yeah. So I prefer it during the day.
What about DCA?
California Adventure, you know, it's beautiful at night. They do a nice job with the lighting. So I don't have any preference, okay. I think, over it. But, I don't find Hollywood Boulevard special. The lighting of the Carthay Circle is very nice in Buena Vista Street. I think Cars Land and Radiator Springs, the lighting is gorgeous.
Yeah.
There. I don't like Paradise Pier. So, that's another one where, you know, turn on the bulldozers and get rid of it. And I am not enamored at all by Pixar Pier. I think all they're doing, it's still bad theming, in my opinion. All they're doing is doing set decoration on a bad concept. And as President Obama said, lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig.
I don't share your sentiments to that, but I do agree. There's aspects of Pixar Pier that I am concerned about, but I don't know. There's something, and I know this is specifically Cove Bar, but there is something about Cove Bar area sitting up there and watching that Paradise Pier area that I don't know. It was just, maybe it's I had too many memories there in a very short amount of time, but that was always a place that I felt like you could actually just sit and breathe and take in that section. So
Cove Bar is very nice, and lights, twinkling lights on the water are always pretty. And I also like the Wine Country Trattoria, up above.
Yeah.
There, that's a very nice relaxing area as well in the evening.
Yeah. So I think for me, I agree with you totally on Magic Kingdom and Disneyland. It's all night. That's literally, if I could literally have it night from sun up to sundown, that would be perfect. I would be smitten. I would be one of those people that if you ever had the option to only go in overnight and relive the times where the 24-hour days were a big thing, I was that person who waited until it was dark to show up and stayed all night. I love those parks at night.
And like Adventureland just takes on this mystery.
Yeah.
Mystery at night with the lighting and it's dark.
Yeah. So, it's just everything. Yeah. Tomorrowland, as terrible as it is, has an extra life to it. You know, there's not perfect parts. Like Fantasyland doesn't do that much for me at night, but a lot of the other areas just make up for it, especially like you said, Adventureland, Tomorrowland, and then Main Street. Those three sections right there just fill it out nicely, and I think that goes for both coasts at the Magic Kingdom and Disneyland. With Epcot, I am half and half. I think Future World is something to be seen at night. I think the neon and the lights really transform it into a more interesting place than it is in the daytime. But World Showcase, I feel exactly like you do, to really get those details that are hidden around, you need to see it in the day. At night, it's great, but you miss out on a lot by not having the proper daytime lighting. With Hollywood Studios, I think that's also a nighttime park. But that's just my perception on old Hollywood, I guess. Everything's at night. People are going out to eat at the Brown Derby, having cocktails, dancing the night away. I don't know where I formed that in my head, but that's my opinion. There's nothing like being at Hollywood Studios towards the end of the night where you hear that 40s Hollywood music playing, the big band stuff, and it's just awesome.
And I do like Hollywood Boulevard with all the neon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
that's
special.
Very California and all that. I like that.
I do too. And Animal Kingdom, I'm a daytime on that. I think like Tree of Life, the little moments that happen on it, I think they're beautiful. I think Pandora is great at night, but I think it's a day park. It really was designed to see during the day. And while there's aspects, it's still for the day. And then for California Adventure, I'm I'm kind of like I am with Epcot. I'm half and half. I think Radiator Springs excels at night. It's beautiful in the day. It excels at night. But overall, the rest of the park, I could see it in the daytime. I think some areas like Grizzly Peak are just, it's better in the daytime. You have that mm-hmm. more rustic feel to it. When it's night, it feels like when you're walking around in a forest at night, it's just dark. So
yeah, I agree.
So you made good points about the rest, so I don't need to repeat. But it is interesting how it goes to even regional theme parks all around the world, regional amusement parks. It's amazing to see the transformation between day and night inside these amusement parks, because just they have such different personalities.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely, and how they change. It's interesting. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I will ask you the next question, and I think I'm going to move on to a film one because I like going in that route every now and then, and I'm going to go with this one because I like talking about it every now and then, talked about it in other shows, but I don't think you and I have ever discussed it. This one's from Jack, bringing up Pirates of the Caribbean, Haunted Mansion, Tower of Terror, the poor, poor country bears. All of those have been made into movies in some sort, whether theatrical or television-based. Which Disney attraction that isn't already based on a film would you choose to be adapted for the big screen?
Okay, this will be a really short answer for me. Okay, because when one that I looked and thought about, and I thought, how many of these films were actually good films? And I have no desire to see any more films based on attractions. I would rather see original films. I like the stories of the attractions in the parks. I like that we can fill in stories with our own imaginations. I think the original Pirates of the Caribbean was an excellent story, excellent film. And because it took so many elements from, the attraction. But the others, they were not good. And I know Guillermo del Toro, I guess there's always the rumor he's going to a Haunted Mansion film. That would be intriguing.
Yeah, and not necessarily a rumor with that, because he used to post stuff, like actively saying that he was working on it and getting close to it, and then it just would disappear.
Yeah, but is there even a script? I don't know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that one I would find intriguing because I find his films and his art style and his directorial technique intriguing, but I have no desire to see one.
Yeah, I understand that. The one that I would say, I don't know how it would go, because it could have the potential to be very, very dumb.
Oh, but God. I would say, don't tell me Murder on the Monorail.
No, I would love to see. Because the comic was so well done, I would love to see Journey into Imagination and see where they could go with that. It could be very broad. I could see it being a very big CGI fest that goes horribly wrong, and the audience is finally seeing Figment and being like, what in the world is wrong with these Disney people? What are they looking at? But I don't know. I feel like it could have a lot of potential with that steampunk style like they did in the comic book to translate to that to the big screen, but it also could go over looking like another version of the Wild Wild West movie with Will Smith and Kevin Kline that tried to forget about for years and years.
Yeah, so. I saw that.
But I think Journey into Imagination, not your imagination, but into imagination, I feel like there's the potential where with an original story, and it could be interesting with the right cast and the right concept.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
It's still a stretch, though. But I agree with yours. Yours is the most likely answer of stay away. Just stop.
Anyway, I'll have to. I think I do have the hardback. You know, the compendium of all the graphic novels brought together for that. I'll have.
To Yeah, it's good. It's actually really good work.
Good. Yeah, I'll look forward to that. Alrighty. Oh, my turn.
Yeah.
Let's see here. I could do that one, and the answer is no. Here's one. Okay, Sebastian. What Disney film, animated or live action, that was made when Walt was alive, would y'all like to see represented in the parks that isn't currently? So this is reverse engineering of the last question.
Exactly. See, it's tough because there are, there's little things like, technically you could say that The Legend of Sleepy Hollow is represented because of the Headless Horseman during Halloween time, or over in our Liberty Square having the quick service stand that makes a reference to it. But I don't think we would count something like that, right? That's stretching it.
That's stretching it. I do like the fact we have the Headless Horseman. I mean, we have them in both parks now.
Yeah, so. And
yeah, that is nice.
I think that would be one for me that I would love. I would love to see that turned into a dark ride. I feel like the concept is there, whether it's just you're being chased by the Headless Horseman the entire time, kind of, along that same lines as Snow White's Scary Adventures of the Queen just always popping up, scaring the bejesus out of you. And the obviously the witch aspect of her too. I feel like something like that could be done with The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, and if they could incorporate Bing Crosby in there in any way too, then that's just icing on the cake. But if you would have asked me this years and years ago, it would have been incorporating either Saludos Amigos or the Three Caballeros in the parks more. Because even though I never owned a copy of either movie on VHS while I was growing up, or even DVD, I never bothered purchasing them. And I'm still waiting for them to come out on Blu-ray, which I hope it will one day. And it's looking more and more unlikely as time goes on. But I do have a strong appreciation for those films, too. So that was... But Legend of Sleepy Hollow, that's my one.
I agree. That was actually on my list, was The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. I actually have a group of three, and it's three that we discussed when we talked about Fantasyland for the Magic Kingdom. We did the history of that. I would like to see the three original attractions that were conceived for that, and for that realm, because the Imagineers didn't want to repeat what had been created at Fantasyland, but then Roy saw the budget going crazy for Walt Disney World and said, why are you going to create new attractions? Let's just take what we know already works and put it in Fantasyland. But of course, the budget still went crazy because the Imagineers improved on the attractions, and they saved no money. One is The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. That was supposed to be one of the attractions to replace Snow White's Scary Adventures. And, you know, we guess would have ridden in jack-o'-lanterns, but they would have spun so that, like basically a teacup, and basically like Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin.
That's exactly what it was
concept.
Gonna say. Yeah.
And you would go, you guests could then spin around and look. It would be the first 360-degree attraction. Then they would go through and they would encounter the Headless Horseman. I think that would have been cool. And that would have helped with the transition from Fantasyland over to Liberty Square.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And then, of course, it would have been Sleeping Beauty would have been one of the attractions in there. They were planning a dark ride for her. And then Mary Poppins, where you would have ridden a carousel horse.
yeah.
through the attraction. So I would have liked to have seen those three attractions built.
Yeah. And that's
I'd like to see them still built.
Obviously, I was going to mention Mary Poppins, but because the rumor's always swirling mm-hmm. that we may be getting it in Epcot's World Showcase, I still just... I don't want to jinx us on that one in case something yeah. does get added like that. But mm-hmm. yeah, Mary Poppins is definitely up there, especially on this coast.
Yeah, that would be nice. Yeah, because originally they were going to put Alice in Wonderland over there, was the original concept. And but I would prefer yeah. to see Mary Poppins.
I love Alice, there. But I also love Mary Poppins. Mm-hmm. All good. I need to ask you a quick question. It's I don't want this to count as my own because I have another one right after, but this one just tickled me because I want to talk about the one part of it. But Rick asked two questions. I'm ignoring the first part. And then he asked, what Disney classic would you rather see get remade? Apple Dumpling yes. Gang, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Treasure Island, or the one I want to talk about, Mr. Boogity?
Okay. I feel none of these should be remade. I have not seen Mr. Boogity.
You haven't seen it?
I don't know how I avoided it because it played on the Disney Channel so often. But the others, I think they're great. How can you improve 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea? You can't. I was horrified when they were going to make it with what, Will Smith or somebody? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the guy.
Or The Rock or something.
It was going to be made by the guy, and maybe this was the one that's still in development, but. There's one that's in development where the guy from Charlie's Angels, who directed those movies, like McGee or something, that's what he was going to do. But hopefully that was based on the book and not what we love.
Oh, this film is perfection. And Apple Dumpling Gang, oh my gosh. You're going to replace, what, Don Knotts?
Yeah, right.
And Tim Conway? And really. You're not going to... Who are you going to get? Will Ferrell? And I don't know who else. Adam Sanders? I don't know. But, No. Leave those alone. A Treasure Island? Again, perfection. Every critic says out of all the versions made of Treasure Island, that was the best. It's the epitome. Long John Silver. Every pirate that came after... him in every movie is based on that character. So on that depiction of a sea pirate.
Well,
so
my wife would disagree with you. Kylie would say that Muppet Treasure Island is the ultimate version of Treasure Island.
Yes, but... and then watch that and then go to Liberty Square. That's very enjoyable. But I would say if you're going with the classic retelling.
I agree with you on all three of them. Apple Dumpling, 20,000 Leagues, and Treasure Island, they are all perfect. There is Disney, I don't know what they would do if they ever honestly went through a remake on them. But Mr. Boogity, you need to watch it.
Tell us about that.
It's I think it was late 80s. It had to be around that era, maybe even mid-80s early, but definitely 80s. It's a... I believe it was made for The Wonderful World of Color, if I could be mm-hmm. correct. But then, as you said, it was replayed just over and over and over again on Disney Channel back in the paid era. And then once they started coming up with original crap like Halloween Town and such, a lot of those movies kind of took a back seat to it. But it is essentially a ghost story of a family that's in their house with a ghost, and it even spawned a sequel. That's how good it was. And I will be honest, like you, it was on Disney Channel all the time. I don't think I watched it. I didn't see it until it was part of a Halloween version of Treasures from the Disney Vault. In like, I want to say it was the first round that they did in October, and it was like one of the 3 or 4 a.m. movies that was on, and it's only 50 minutes long because it was made for Wonderful World of Color, and it is It is bad. It is not a good movie. It is a bad 80s movie.
I thought you were going to rave about it.
But no, it is. It's a so bad it's good one. It really is. And it's something that I feel like it could honestly be remade. And okay. it wouldn't be the same, but the technology is so bad at the time. It's like they didn't have the budget to, you know, a lot of green screen and computer technology wasn't around yet. So they still used more practical approaches to do a lot of the special effects in it. And it's just not good. So it could be remade and made better nowadays. They just took kind of the basic concept of it, but I would love for them to do something with, because it's one of those concepts. I'm sure kids of the 80s are very familiar with it, and they would eat up the concept, and a lot of other people would get to discover it for the first time. So, and maybe that would also warrant a good copy of Mr. Boogity coming out. And I'm all for being able to see higher quality releases of old Disney productions being put out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was followed by the... I looked it up. It was followed by The Bride of Boogity.
Of course.
Yes. And, of course, what happened to Son of Boogity?
That could be the reboot. It doesn't have to be a remake. It can be a reboot now.
Okay. And Satan appears in this film?
You need to watch it.
But what I don't get is, oh, okay, yeah.
If you think about it too much, you're not going to get any of it. I'll just warn you right there.
Okay,
it's a good one to add in your Halloween repertoire. Quick, easy one to watch.
I will look for that. I'm sure it's available.
Yeah, online. It is. I think you can do like the YouTube rental for like $2.99 or something. It's not bad, and it's on iTunes. I know that.
Okay.
But I guess that one turned into a longer question than I originally intended, so you can go next if you want. Otherwise, I do have another one picked up.
Oh, okay. No, go ahead. Go with yours.
This one comes from Ryan, and it's Ryan Teets, actually. I'll mention his last name since he's a big contributor to the Diz and does our monthly rumor roundups, where he pulls all the rumors from all around the internet on Disney parks. And he asked, what do we feel is the best addition to the Disney company during the Eisner era? And if we can tag on who our favorite Imagineers, that is good too, but mostly the first part.
Okay. Yeah, I have an extensive list of who my favorite Imagineers are, Ryan. I thought about this, and probably the expansion of Walt Disney World with all the different resorts that we've come to enjoy. And because really, when you think about it, there wasn't much to Walt Disney World. There was just a handful of resorts. There, you know, there were the two theme parks. I don't think there were any real plans to expand. Now, the downside was, you know, the reason there weren't a lot of resorts was because Roy and the company felt they wanted to be good neighbors with Orlando. Mm-hmm. So they wanted folks to, stay at the hotels and motor inns that had built up around Walt Disney World. Michael Eisner thought, why are we letting people spend money off property? And he was the concept of keep them on property. He really started that. And also the theme parks. He got Disney MGM Studios, got that going. Animal Kingdom, he got rolling along. Walt Disney World would not be the vacation wonderland it is today if it was not for Michael Eisner.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I will actually, as much as I agree with the broadness of what you said too, and I mean, well, you weren't totally broad. You pinpointed on a lot of stuff, but like at first, my answer was going to be something like Hollywood Studios, which was definitely his brainchild. That was something he wanted in. And I mean, a lot of him is in that park and is going away slowly and slowly and slowly, depending on how you feel about him, maybe for the better. But ultimately, And this is probably just because I just finished reading his biography, but it was really Michael Eisner's relationship with Jim Henson and being able to acquire the Muppets that I think is huge. And even though they haven't been utilized properly, with the exception of the 2011 movie, The Muppets, they've never been utilized the right way. But It's just the potential is there. And, you know, I knew all about the stuff that you hear about with it, that, like, you know, they started the concept for how grand the Muppets were going to have a presence in Hollywood studios. And then ultimately they started work on Muppet Vision 3D, but then Jim passed away unexpectedly. And that was, I believe, from the timeline that I could put together in the book, that was like 2 days before they finally had settled on the contracts, the back and forth, because from the announcement that they made the announcement, I believe in 89, that they were going to join forces. And then it took a year of going back and forth with lawyers to get the whole proposal right and make sure that Jim's people were taken care of under Disney, and Disney wasn't completely screwing them over on certain aspects. And like, Disney kept trying to go after Sesame Street, even though that was off the table. But ultimately they couldn't reach the contract agreement before Jim passed away, and then it just kind of dissolved. But Michael Eisner never really lost sight of that and never forgot about the Muppets. And I didn't even realize that Michael Eisner was the one at ABC that gave the Muppets, the first TV show, The Muppet Show, a chance during pilots. So it goes, that relationship goes that far back. There's so much in the book, in Jim Henson's biography, about how anytime he had to deal with Katzenberg, he wanted to just walk away. And then Michael Eisner would have to swoop in and come and make everything all right again. And because he was having a great time working with Imagineers on coming up with those concepts. And then Katzenberg would swoop in and be the grading person that unfortunately history has written for his story. But then Michael Eisner would save everything. So I would say everything he did to get and finally then acquire the Muppets is a very important thing. And I think one day we'll be happy for it.
I agree. And, you know, as much as I despise them being in Liberty Square, I like the Muppets.
Yeah.
And I agree. I don't understand why they can't figure out what to do with them. Some of their concepts have been just so lame brain.
Yeah.
And then some of the ones that sounded like they'd be really good, they pull back on.
Well, and even think about, like, the original attraction that Jim was super excited about was the great movie ride version of the Muppets that was all wrong. And everything was going wrong with it. And that today, now, especially after losing the great movie ride, to then turn around and take the original concepts they came up with for that and to put them in Hollywood studios, I think that would be hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
And that's as a person who loved the great movie ride, to see them now like go back and kind of play on all that, but use the Muppets properly. I think just ultimately it comes down to the same problem that Henson fought for most of the career. It's, the Muppets were always a thing that he intended for not just kids. He didn't want to be stuck in the mold that Muppets are puppets for kids. It's for adults. It's for everyone to enjoy. And I think Disney struggles with the same thing. They tried the adult route with the TV show that just didn't get a lot of love. But, you know, it's how often are the first season of any TV show actually good? So I don't believe it got its fair amount of time, but I feel the same way in the parks. I don't think they're getting the fair amount of input that they should, considering now with Star Wars, granted it's a much bigger much bigger property and should get more attention, but you can't walk into Hollywood studios without tripping over Star Wars now. And yet the Muppets, you still just got your little Pizzarizzo and Muppet Vision 3D, and that's all.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's me on there.
Yeah.
So, your turn, question.
Okay, well, should we talk about the Imagineers?
You can list them off. I would say, while I do have my favorite ones, along, you know, like, I appreciate Tony Baxter, and Claude Coates.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we want to, would we consider Mary Blair also an Imagineer since she did work?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Her as well. I think the ultimate shout out would, while I do have the favorites, I think my favorite ones are probably the ones who have never gotten a chance to shine in the spotlight and never will. The ones who were, you know, busy doing rock work where they have studied rocks their entire lives. Just so that way when you walk past Expedition Everest, it looks as authentic as possible. And you will never know the names of the Imagineers who worked on that. You will never hear anything from them unless you're lucky enough to be on a tour where they're included in it. But there are so many Imagineers that are working that never get one little bit of recognition at all. And you know what? Those are my favorite ones, because when Imagineering did become if you get good enough at it, you're going to be a well-known one. Your name's going to be out there. The ones who kept everything running despite not having the fame and the notoriety from it, those are the ones that are important to me. But I know that's kind of a cop-out answer, but that's kind of the truth.
I think it's true. Folks should know that there are hundreds and hundreds of Imagineers that build the parks and contribute to the parks in all kinds of areas of expertise. And we only know a handful of them. So, you know, that gain fame.
Yeah.
So, of mine, of course, Walt Disney, the first Imagineer, I guess say.
Bad answer.
So, Ken Anderson, he designed most of the original, you know, Disneyland Fantasyland attractions. He also worked on the original concepts for the Haunted Mansion. Some of my others, Exitensio, we, of course, know his songs. And in some of our favorite attractions, you mentioned Tony Baxter. He designed some of Disney's most famous modern attractions. Mary Blair, It's a Small World, but the massive murals in the Disney's Contemporary Resort.
Yeah.
She designed, and of course the murals in Disneyland's Tomorrowland of 1967. Roger Broggi, he helped develop audio animatronics, Circle Vision 360, the One-Way People Mover, the Viewliner, the Santa Fe Disneyland Railroad, the Monorail, the Matterhorn, and the Dark Ride transportation systems. He's amazing. Harriet Burns, she was the first female Imagineer. She helped design audio animatronic attractions, and she designed the Plaza Inn. You mentioned Claude Coates. Rolly Crump. He was known for his kinetics. He designed much of Epcot, and everything was very richly stylized that he did. Alice Davis, who of course designed costumes for many of the AA figures. Her husband, Mark Davis, gave comedy to a lot of the attractions in the Jungle Cruise, the Tiki Room, Pirates of the Caribbean, Haunted Mansion, Carousel of Progress, Contributor Jamboree, America Sings. Steve Davidson, we enjoy his Disney spectaculars, like the parades, the fireworks, World of Color, Paint the Night.
Yeah.
So those are all his. Bill Evans, he was the chief landscaper for the Disney parks. Joe Fowler, he designed Disneyland and Walt Disney World. You ride his boat over there, Blaine Gibson, you know, the sculptor extraordinaire.
You see his work at Hall of Presidents.
That's right. Hall of Presidents and the partner statues. Mm-hmm. Yale Gracie, he did special effects, most famously for the Haunted Mansion. Oh, our very own Bob Gurr.
I was hoping you were going to save that for last. And then, yeah. Of course, the most important, Bob Gurr, yes, in case you're listening. He's
been on this on the Diz many times. John Hench, who just did so much exterior design work, including the overall design of Epcot Center. And he was known for his color palettes,
yeah,
that he designed. Joe Rohde. You know, of course, we know him for Animal Kingdom, Disney's Animal Kingdom, and a lot of the Disney resort hotels.
Yep.
So Herb Ryman, I have some of his art hanging in my study here. Of course, the Sherman Brothers for the music they contributed to attractions, and we can't forget Marty Sklar.
Of course, no. And I'd even add one more current Imagineer, Michael Roddy. As some mm-hmm. people know him as J. Michael Roddy, spent a lot of time at Universal, but he is, lately, he's been the one who has been leading a lot of the projection mapping, specifically when it comes to show entertainment at Hollywood Studios, and with mm-hmm. everything on the Great Movie Ride, and building and putting together the Star Wars fireworks there, and all the presentations like that, and... You know, obviously, we've seen where Disney has been going with projection mapping and projection technology. So it's he's leading a lot of the way on that. So it's going to be interesting to see how it's used even further into the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Good choice. Okay. All righty. So
we probably got two more questions or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's see, should we move, how about moving into, let me take a look, we have a couple more categories we haven't gotten into. Let me shuffle through all my stuff here. Let's see, oh, there was one, where is it? Okay, here it is, in our Walt Disney categories. I really had to think about this one. Colville,
I just realized I skipped right over that. I forgot it was up there.
Oh, I figured you were saving it for the end.
Well, now I am. Yep, that's what I was doing.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay, here you go. Well, this is a good one towards the end. You've accepted a mysterious pixie-dusted invitation to dine at 2980 Los Feliz Boulevard in Los Angeles, the famous Tam O'Shanter restaurant. Arriving, you're seated at table 31 across from a familiar face, Walt Disney himself. Of course, that was Walt's table. As a great admirer of your podcast, he's decided to allow you to ask three questions of him on any topic. What three questions do you ask, Craig?
The first one I would ask is what I would ask anyone if I only had the chance to a historical figure of sorts, and that would be, what's your biggest regret in life?
Mm-hmm.
Just, I don't know why. It's a little morbid, but it's a fascinating question, and it can open up to a very long explanation of mm-hmm. sorts that you'd never expect. I would ultimately, I would probably, just because it's one of the questions that we get asked about what he would think so much, I would just flat out ask him, like, is there any limit on anything in your parks? Even though they're not a museum, is there anything that you would honestly, you want to stay forever? And, I mean, obviously we know something like the castle he would answer, but I would be genuinely interested in that. And then I would say the next question would be, where else in the world would you want to develop and set up shop for Disney? Because I don't know. We know about the projects that you've talked about before, like the Mineral King project and such. Obviously, we did the one show on what would have happened in St. Louis, and and it's a question you might have an answer for, and I've just generally never come across. Would Walt have even saw down the line, like building empires in Tokyo, in Shanghai, in Paris? I would be really interested to where he would want to set up shop overseas. So I would say those are my three questions. Regrets, what you would want to keep in Disneyland, and where would you expand in the future overseas?
Okay, good. Well, I'm hoping we sit next to each other so that we each hear the answers to our questions. Mine would be, was there an event or person in your life that set you on the path to creating one of the largest entertainment corporations? Because I always like to know, what was the person's ultimate inspiration, or what was that turning point?
Yeah, someone has to push you over the edge. Yeah,
exactly. His love of technology and all that, I want to know, what is your reaction to the passionate Disney fan community that has developed worldwide since your passing, especially with the internet and social media age?
Good.
Because I don't think he would have ever anticipated this, to where even like businesses like Dreams Unlimited Travel and fan-based podcasts like The Diz Connecting with Walt would, and there's so many of them.
Yeah,
I don't know what would his reaction be to this. So, and my third one would be, so you could focus on projects like Epcot Mineral King. You had your brother Roy and your son-in-law Ron Miller in leadership positions. Did you ever anticipate your family would no longer hold leadership positions in your company?
That's a good one. That'd be my number four, probably.
Yeah, so those would be mine. So I think together we would have some really good questions for him here.
we'd get some good ones. So let's get together and let's find the most accredited psychic out there, and one the best medium that can channel the dead, and let's get this going.
That's right. We'll do that. Yeah, we'll do it in the Haunted Mansion or somewhere, you know.
Perfect.
All right.
Okay, I will ask you one more question, and I'll have to go to the... You titled it Miscellaneous, and obviously we missed out on the chance for it to be the Mouselaneous, but I'll let that one slide. And I'm going to choose... I think this is a really fun one to finish up on. If you could get, this comes from Jesse, sorry. And Jesse says, if you could get into a time machine and go back to any event in Disney history, which would you go to and why?
I thought about this because I thought, I know like some people will say, I won't say because it might be yours, but I told Carol what I was saying. She says, this is going to offend people. And I thought, no, I don't think so.
I need to know now. You have to spell it. You can't bait it like that.
I would go back to World War I France, to the time Walt reached for his first cigarette, and warn him about smoking and its effects.
I didn't even think of that. That's actually amazing.
So, because then, you know what? Maybe we would get 20 or 30 more years of Walt.
Yeah.
Who knows what he would have accomplished.
No, I agree. That's a really good answer. I would have never thought of that. Mm-hmm. But I honestly would go for what I believe is the cheap answer. And for me, it's not about going there to tell Walt he's doing life wrong, but it's something I think everyone who has ever stepped foot in Disneyland has ever thought about. But being there for that opening, not the first day, but the opening day press event when they were doing all the live stuff and Walt Disney giving the speech and being able to be on Main Street for that moment and just experiencing it. Like, I don't, as far as the parks, if you're a parks fan, I don't know if there could be a better moment to ever go to in Disney history.
Yeah. I mean, because you're seeing history unfold in the theme park industry, in Disney history. I agree. If you're a theme park fan, if you're a technology fan, that's the place to be.
Yeah, it's yeah. But I don't know. I go with your answer, actually. Of course, you'd have to come back with studies, and he would start to lose his mind about how you're from the future and coming back to warn him about smoking. But and think about it. Just, oh man, if you could go back and affect him like that, get him to stop. Think about how many other celebrities we lost way too early, whether it was from smoking, drugs, that maybe he would have had an impact on one day by saying, no, I've been visited by a man from the future who said, don't do these harmful things to your body. Which, I know, then he probably would have been run out of Hollywood if he ever would have made it there.
But then there's the whole butterfly effect, you know?
Yeah.
The butterfly flaps its wings. It changes, you know, it changes something that happens 100 years in the future, 1,000 years in the future. So
it's a, we might not even be here if Walt stopped smoking.
That's right. Anyway. So I think that was a good one. So I think we're wrapping it up.
Yeah.
There. So that was fun. And if we didn't get to your questions, I am sorry. I wish we had more time to answer them all. But thank you so much for taking the time to send them in. We will have more Q&A episodes this year. So if we couldn't answer your question this time, please send it in again the next time Craig puts out the call. And maybe we'll be able to use it then. Or you might come up with a completely different one that we'll use.
Yep. And I will challenge everyone out there. If I see you send in a Mr. Boogity question, we are more likely to talk about it.
No doubt.
I love me some Boogity. But yeah, no, this was fun. So we'll do it again very soon in the future here. And I can't wait for it. So if we didn't use your question, like Michael said, sorry, but there will be more. Do not get discouraged.
Absolutely. Well, now it is that time of the show. It is your very favorite out there. It is time for This Day in Disney History Quiz. This time it is for the week of March 11th. And we have a lovely contestant joining us today to challenge Craig. It is the charming Tyler Crouch from our West Coast team of the Diz Unplugged. Tyler, welcome to Connecting with Walt.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. I'm really happy to be here. And Craig, you're going down, buddy.
No, I like the challenge.
I was like frightened before the microphone went live. So, no. Yep. But thanks for having me. Seriously, it's awesome.
No, we're really happy to have you join us. Some of our listeners, Connecting with Walt listeners, may not have met you, Tyler, or seen your work. Can you let them know what you do for the Diz?
Yeah, I am an associate producer for the Diz, and I'm basically on the West Coast side. So I basically do a lot of vlogs, and recently I've been doing Best and Worst of Disneyland with a few of the folks that you may know from the Disneyland podcast. Mary Jo is on the first episode, and then Tom Bell will be on the next episode. So, you know, some familiar faces coming in. So, yeah, that's what I've been up to. Yeah, that's what's been going on.
Yep, my old colleagues there. So, yeah, we always joke that Connecting with Walt is the spin-off show of the Disneyland show.
And so. Best and Worst is the spin-off.
That's right. Good. Excellent. Yeah, so check out, go on the Diz and DizUnplugged.com and check out Tyler's work. Just does a fantastic job.
Thank you.
I always enjoy it. If you can't get to Disneyland, watching his videos is the next best thing
to being there.
So you're welcome. So, Tyler, here are the rules. We're going to test your Disney knowledge. And, of course, we're testing about all things Disney. It could be the Disney theme parks, Disney music, Disney films, the life of Walt Disney, or the people that helped create the Disney legacy. If you it's going to be multiple choice questions, one for each day of the week. If you choose not to hear the multiple choice answers and you get it correct, you will get 3 points. If you want to hear the multiple choice answers and you answer it correctly, you will get 2 points. If you ask to have an incorrect answer removed, and of course it's never the one you want removed, and you get it correct, it will be 1 point. However, let's say Craig answers a question incorrectly. You can steal that question and get it correct for 1 point. So, got the rules? Sounds good.
I got it.
Okay. All right. Well, since you are our guest contestant, you can choose to either go first or pass the first question on to Craig. So what will it be?
I don't know. I had some time to think about this, and I'm still thinking there's going to be some dead air. No, I'm just kidding. I think I'll go second, actually. I want to hear the first question, see what I'm in for.
Okay, get a feel for it?
Yeah.
Okay, good strategy there. Okay, Craig, this is for March 11th. On March 11th, 2010, Academy Award-winning composers Richard M. Sherman and Robert B. Sherman received this tribute.
I would like multiple choice, please.
All right. Did they receive A, stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, B, Academy Award for Extraordinary Distinction in Lifetime Achievement, C, induction into the Songwriters Hall of Fame, or D, window on Disneyland's Main Street, USA?
Wow, I'm very perplexed by this one.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
I'll take away one.
Take away one. All right. I will take away A, stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Okay. I will go... Oh, man. I don't feel like this is right. I feel like it would have happened sooner, but I'll say window on Main Street.
That is correct.
Okay.
The answer is D, the Academy Award-winning composers of the music from It's a Small World and The Enchanted Tiki Room, as well as Mary Poppins, Richard M. Sherman and Robert B. Sherman, they received a tribute window on Disneyland's Main Street, USA. The window is dedicated to the Sherman Brothers Reeds, two brothers tune makers, with their name inscribed underneath. So, and Tyler, I bet you know where it's at, since you're our Disneyland guy.
Oh man, wow. Yeah, it's on Main Street.
Very good. Hence,
thank you.
It's actually a door. It's a window in a door at the 20th Century Music Company.
Okay. Yeah, I should have been able to know that actually.
Yeah. So okay, Craig, you get 1 point. So Tyler,
good job, Craig. Virtual handshake to you.
Thank you.
And Tyler, you can jump ahead though. With this question. So, for March 12th, this opened at the Magic Kingdom on March 12th, 2012. This is the Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World.
Okay. 2012. March 12th, 2012, you said, right?
Yes.
So, if I get it wrong, Craig gets to choose, right?
He could steal it, yes.
Hmm.
So, you've got to think, is it worth the shot? Or
I know. I'm thinking... I might know what it is, but you know what? Maybe I should just go with the multiple choice. This should be safe.
All right. Is it A, phase one of the storybook circus area of Fantasyland? B, the interactive game Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom? C, Princess Fairy Tale Hall? Or D, Disney Universe-city?
You know... I think I'm going to say the circus.
Your answer is A, phase one of the storybook circus area of Fantasyland.
Yes.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
You are absolutely correct.
Yes.
The Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World unveils the first phase of the new storybook circus area of Fantasyland with a soft opening. The storybook circus area pays tribute to the traveling circuses of the 1950s and 60s and features the first part of Dumbo the Flying Elephant, with Dumbo spinning clockwise for the first time in Magic Kingdom history. The Barnstormer, starring the Great Goofini, which is a family coaster, and the Fantasyland train station, one of 3 stops for the Walt Disney World Railroad. Very good. Tyler, you're pulling ahead now with 2 points. So it is 2-2-1, and now we're back.
I didn't guess.
Yeah, that is good. So, okay, Craig, we're now to you. This is your opportunity to jump forward here. So, going into wide release on this day, on March 13th, 1969, this Disney film was the highest grossing film of the year.
I will do a multiple choice.
Okay. Is it A, the reissue of Fantasia, B, Blackbeard's Ghost, C, The Love Bug, or D, The Aristocats?
Okay, I'm glad I asked for multiple choice because I had completely forgot about the idea of even thinking about live action. I'm perplexed by this. I'm gonna go with the reissue of Fantasia just because I know that it was big joke of like hippies watching Fantasia in the late 60s. So I'm just gonna go with that.
With that crazy sort of psychedelic poster and all that. Yeah. That's why I put that on there. That is incorrect. Okay, Tyler, do you want to try to steal this one?
You know what? I think I'm going to say Herbie the Love Bug.
And you would be correct.
Yeah.
Disney's film The Love Bug, starring Dean Jones, Michelle Lee, Buddy Hackett, and Joe Flynn, is generally released. This was directed by Robert Stevenson. It actually had debuted last December 1968. And of course, this is a film about a race car driver who becomes a champion driving a Volkswagen Beetle who has a mind of its own. This will be the highest grossing in the United States during 1969, and it will lead to three sequels and a limited TV series. And of course, it does enhance the Volkswagen Beetle's image. So Tyler, very good. That is 1 point. So you have 3 to Craig's 1. And it's your turn.
Woo-hoo.
So, okay. On March 14th, 1920, cartoonist Hank Ketcham, best known as the creator of Dennis the Menace, is born in Seattle, Washington. What is his Disney connection?
Oh, boy. I almost feel like you've probably talked about this in a past episode. I'm going to have to go with the multiple choices.
Okay. A, Dennis the Menace was the first comic strip to feature non-Disney characters. Dennis and his family, along with Dennis's pal Joey, visit Disneyland. Or is it B, Hank Ketcham and his family lived next door to Walt Disney and his family in Holmby Hills? C, Hank Ketcham was an animator at the Walt Disney Studio? Or D, in the first cross-promotion between Walt Disney and a non-Disney television show, the 1958 episode of Hank Ketcham's Dennis the Menace television series episode, Dennis Goes to the Movies, shows a scene with Dennis's parents leaving him with a babysitter so they can have a night out to see the Western Disney film Tonka.
Wow. I'm going to have to go with C.
You are correct. He started in the business as an animator, first for Walter Lantz, who of course created Woody Woodpecker, and then Walt Disney for 3 years. And you might be surprised to know he worked on such films as Fantasia, Bambi, and Pinocchio. And in 1951, Ketcham created Dennis the Menace, who was based on his 4-year-old son, Dennis. So very good, Tyler.
Thank you. Where did you come up with some of these answers? Those were some involved answers.
Thank you. It does take me a while. I'm very creative. Anyway, okay, hey Craig, you got to step up here. So your reputation's on the line.
I will say it's one of those matches where I have known the answer to Tyler's. more than my own.
Isn't that always the way?
So. You know, I agree with you too, Craig. I know the answers to mine more than I know to yours, honestly. So. But it's just how it's worked out.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is funny. Okay. Okay, Craig, this Disney film became the first full-length movie to be sold on Apple's iTunes Music Store on March 15th, 2006.
Oh,
Now, you're our film guy.
Yeah, well, except I still don't buy movies on iTunes.
That's why you're the film guy.
Because I...
movies on iTunes.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, man. See, part of me wants to be bold and just outright guess.
It would definitely boost your score.
It would boost the score, but
and your rep.
Since I only buy one, I'll do multiple choice.
All right. A, Cars. B, High School Musical. C, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, or D, The Nightmare Before Christmas?
I 2006?
Correct. March 15th, 2006.
And sorry, the answers were Cars.
Yeah, A, Cars, B, High School Musical, C, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, or D, The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Okay. I could have swore that Cars came out in summer of 2006, so I could be wrong about that, but I'm going to eliminate that. I feel like that was an off year for Snow White to be really, and it's Snow White. Yeah, no, that can't be. Nightmare. Ugh. I'm gonna go High School Musical.
Good guess, which makes sense.
Wow.
It's iTunes. In another first for Disney and Apple, High School Musical, Disney Channel's hit, becomes the first full-length movie to be sold on Apple's iTunes Music Store.
That's nice. Terrible.
That was some good critical thinking, though.
Yeah, that was. Good, very good. Yeah, good thinking it through.
Yeah, well, I knew Snow White just came out digitally for the first time, like, 2 years ago with the Walt Disney Signature Collection. And putting it together.
My first inclination was Snow White, but yeah. But I would have been wrong.
Yeah, it was definitely between Nightmare and High School Musical, and Nightmare seemed too obvious.
Yeah.
That's a good 2006 movie.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, Tyler, Craig is creeping up on you. So
oh,
it's
no.
3-5 in favor of Tyler. Okay, Tyler. Okay, on March 16th, 1961, Walt Disney's black and white live-action comedy, The Absent-Minded Professor, starring Fred McMurray and Nancy Olson, is released. What well-known Disney personality performed in the film as Fred McMurray's stunt double?
Oh, jeez, Michael. give me the multiple choice on that one.
Okay, was it A, Wally Bogue, who performed as Pecos Bill in Disneyland's Golden Horseshoe Review? B, actor Dean Jones, who would become one of Walt's favorite film actors? C, actor Guy Williams, best known for his role as Zorro in the Disney television series? Or D, Fess Parker, best known as Davy Crockett?
And I can take one away. I'm going to do that.
Okay, you're going to remove one? Okay.
Yeah.
I will remove C, actor Guy Williams.
And that was Zorro, right? That was
Zorro.
Choose. Okay, so who are my other choices again? I'm
okay,
sorry.
That's okay. It's A, Wally Bogue, who performed as Pecos Bill in Disneyland's Golden Horseshoe Review.
Okay.
B, actor Dean Jones. Or D, Fess Parker, best known as Davy Crockett.
I'm going to say Fess Parker.
That is incorrect.
Oh, no. And then Craig has two choices.
Craig, you can steal. So who was Fred McMurray's stunt double in The Absent-Minded Professor? Was it Wally Bogue or Dean Jones?
I don't want to be rude, but it's very... I doubt that very seldomly a lot of stunt doubles eventually went on to have prosperous careers in front of the camera as themselves. And I obviously know that Dean Jones did, but I'm not sure about Wally Bogue if all he was doing was Disneyland. So Wally Bogue, I guess.
Very good. That's right. Disneyland performer Wally Bogue is McMurray's stunt double, particularly in the airborne scenes. And what Wally Bogue said, "I did most of the tricks, especially dancing around with the leading lady. I did a rumba with her, and they would trap me up with a wire. I was wearing his mask, so I was Fred McMurray for all those big leaps." The film is produced in black and white to facilitate a number of unique special effects. And the film's Medfield Fight Song was written by Richard and Robert Sherman. And this was their first song for a Disney feature. So very good. Okay. Well, Craig, you are slowly creeping up on Tyler.
Good
so
job.
So it's 4-5.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Okay. Whoa. Mm-hmm. We're close.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And Craig, this one's for you. This is now March 17th. This Disneyland attraction officially opened on March 17th, 2005.
A Disneyland resort or Disneyland park?
Yes.
Hey, I had to try. Okay, I'll go multiple choice.
Okay. Is it A, the happiest faces on Earth? B, Buzz Lightyear Astro Blasters? C, Space Mountain after a 2-year reconstruction? Or D, Block Party Bash?
I'll go Buzz Lightyear.
You are correct. No. Buzz Lightyear Astro Blasters. It was the newest ride at Disneyland. It officially opened in Tomorrowland after 2 weeks of soft openings. Of course, this was a video game-inspired attraction based on Toy Story 2. It will have a special grand opening on May 5th. Also reopened on the same day was the Disneyland Railroad, which had been shut down since December 2004 for reballasting, regauging, and new block signals. Well, Craig, you know what? You pulled it out of the hole.
Oh, no.
6-5. Good job there, Craig.
Hey, it could have went either way. You were a worthy competitor, Tyler. I know next week when you choose to go first, I will be feeling the same exact pain, I'm sure.
Okay.
I am going to be like getting all my Disney history together, and I'm going to come back next week for more.
Excellent. Well, Tyler, we'll look forward to having you next time in a return match with Craig. Connecting with Walt will be taking a spring break for the next couple of weeks because Craig is traveling to Italy with Dreams Unlimited Travel in the Diz. Craig, can you tell us a little about your trip?
Yeah, I will be spending a long time, way longer than I haven't been on a 2.5-week trip, I think, since the very second trip I ever took with the Diz, where I was gone for 3.5 weeks. So it's a long one, but luckily I'll be with my wife on this one. So I am counting my blessings every day, but I'm going to be able to spend some time in Rome before going on a Viking ocean cruise in semi-oceans, because we're going to be in the Mediterranean Sea going around the boot of Italy. And We are going to be on our big group with a whole bunch of Dizzers. I don't know what the final count is. I believe it's over 100, which is very exciting to be going to Italy and going on that sailing with 100 of our friends either currently friends or will be friends after we finally get a chance to meet them, and then ending the trip with something that I consider myself really lucky for, is that I will be fortunate enough to spend Easter Sunday in Venice. And I'm not Catholic. I wasn't raised Catholic. I did go to a Catholic school. I will most certainly be finding a church that I can spend Easter Sunday on. And because when do you get to do that in your life? To say you spent one of the arguably the most religious holiday in one of the holiest countries in the world. You just don't. So I'm excited to wrap that up, and then I'll be back stateside. So it's going to be an adventure, I'll tell you with that. And hopefully along the way, I'll find a little bit connections to Walt in Europe.
That'll be wonderful. I hope so.
I do too.
It'd be great.
If not, I'll make it up, and we'll be famous for having the inside scoop years and years later on Walt Disney's travels through Italy.
And the Cathedral Basilica of St. Mark is the cathedral church in Venice.
That's where I will have to go.
Excellent. Yeah. Take photos. So, and although there won't be any episodes for a couple of weeks, I'll be busy preparing for the return of Craig and connecting with Walt on Friday, April 6th. So until next time then, Craig, where can our listeners connect with you on the Diz?
Well, you will be able to find me sparingly here and there because we won't be on the air that much. If you're listening to this right away, I know a lot of our audience, it takes a long time to get to these episodes, so I forgive you for that. You'll probably be able to find me everywhere, but you know my normal places. I'm in the Walt Disney World Show on Tuesdays, Thursdays on the Universal Edition, Daily Fix on sporadic days of the week, as well as you can always find me posting funny stuff on Twitter and sometimes on Instagram as well, with my handle being Teleclaster. So what about you, Michael?
Well, you can send me messages at michael@wdwinfo.com. Twitter, I'm mbowling121. Facebook, I'm Michael Bowling. Instagram, I'm Michael Bowling the Diz. And of course, you can connect with me and Walt on the Connecting with Walt Twitter page at Connecting Walt. If you would like to listen to more shows on the history of Walt Disney, his studio, his Imagineers, and Disneyland, check out our Disneyland podcast archives for my Disney history episodes at www.disunplug.com, and look for past episodes of Connecting with Walt on iTunes, where you can subscribe to our show and leave some positive reviews and ratings. And I plan to be at the Walt Disney Family Museum in San Francisco on Saturday, March 17th and Saturday, April 14th. So if you're there, please be sure to say hello. So, and thank you for making us a part of your day. And remember, I only hope that we don't lose sight of one thing, that it was all started by a man, Walt Disney, and his brother Roy. And we'll see you on April 6th.